Marcus Young. How you doing?
Good, Becca.
The Offspring.
How's it going, Becca?
Dave Grohl. How you going, mate?
Good, man.
Pete, it's been a long time coming.
Oh, Becca, hasn't it indeed?
We go inside the dressing room, speak to the biggest names in music.
Keith Richards, the Rolling Stones.
And crack open their esky.
This is exactly how I imagined you, by the way, sitting opposite me with a vodka and orange.
You're a discerning chap.
This is The Rider.
Hey, it's Becca. Welcome back to The Rider. And last week, one of the great chats with Tony Mott, rock photographer. Now, normally you think, rock photographer, it's a visual thing. But no, he had so many great stories from all the years of doing portraits, being in the pit. His story about the Queen after party was a massive highlight. Make sure you go back and check it out if you missed it. Tony Mott on The Rider. You can get it on all platforms. Now, this week, we're all talking about the Taylor Hawkins tribute concert for the Foo Fighters. Two gigs announced, one in Wembley, one in LA at the Forum, and the lineup has come out. In fact, it's gone on sale as well. First of all, the Saturday 3rd of September gig, which is a real highlight for Wembley Stadium. You got Chris Chaney, Stuart Copeland, Liam Gallagher, Brian May, Chris Novoselic, also Dave Chappelle's going to be doing stand-up, and also Nandi Bushell, who's the young drummer who became just an internet sensation throughout COVID, and she's just bloody great. And then there's LA, the Kia Forum, September 27, with Stu Copeland, Miley Cyrus, Geddy Lee, you got Mark Ronson, Pink has been added, Leanne Rimes has been added, you got Nancy Wilson, Wolfgang Van Halen. I mean, this is going to be one of the great gigs, and we don't really know what the future holds for the Foo Fighters, but it's going to be something special. It is a fundraiser as well. If you missed out on those tickets, because it went on sale and it's pretty much sold out already, you can get the merchandise from the Foo Fighters online store, which is going to be a great souvenir to have as we look back and we celebrate the life of Taylor Hawkins. Now, this week on The Rider, it is Chuck from Simple Plan. Perfect.
Even though we're in a band and, you know, you could call us quote-unquote successful or whatever, but there's still moments where you're just like, man, I'm fucking lost. I'm not sure what to do here.
And when you look back on the early noughties, Simple Plan were one of the biggest bands in the world, and they kind of got pigeonholed because they were writing a lot of music that was quite emo, but that's the way it was. You know, in the early noughties, if you were a teenager, you had a lot of themes in these songs that you could relate to. So they really latched on to the early albums from Simple Plan, 2002, No Pads, No Helmets, Just Balls. And that was a debut. That was one of the biggest albums of that particular year. And then now to their sixth album, Harder Than It Looks. It was actually written before COVID, but when you listen to it, you really think this was written all the way through. It felt like it. It was believable. And we'll hear more from it from Chuck, who is connecting right now on Zoom. There he is. I can see his face. Chuck, how are you?
Hey, man. I'm good, and you?
Doing well. Good to see you, mate. And congrats on the album. So this is the sixth album, and you did it probably in the toughest time ever.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a journey for this record, but we're so happy to finally have it out and have people hear the song. It's been great.
Was it something you started before lockdowns and COVID, or was it literally that was the reason why you did it? Was it you know, having all the time to yourself and the fans probably connecting with you as well? Yeah, well, what was it?
Actually, it's kind of an interesting story. We finished the album in February 2020, so literally a few weeks or a few days before the whole world changed and our lives got sort of thrown into the weirdness, I would call it. But yeah, so we were very lucky in some ways because we were able to do the album in sort of the old school way, which is all of us together in the studio. We didn't have to do it via email or FaceTime or anything like that. It was all done the more traditional way. Pierre and I spent about a year and a half writing it together. You know, and then we got together with the band and we recorded it and we had it all done. We were about to release it for a spring summer. And then all of a sudden the pandemic hit and we sort of asked ourselves and okay, is this the right time? And it didn't feel very like appropriate to put out music in the beginning when everybody was so uncertain and like everything was so crazy and just unprecedented. And we just felt like, hey, people's attention is not there. And we were so proud of the album. We really felt we had something special and we didn't want it to just be tossed out there and people not paying attention and us not being able to tour or to promote it properly and being able to play these songs live the way they were meant to be played. So we decided to hold and to kind of wait until we could sort of resume, you know, how things would normally be, I guess, which is touring and going on the road. And then we thought it would be 2-3 months, 4 months. And, you know, obviously, like everybody, we were humbled and things were a bit different. So I would say around last fall, we started to realize, okay, wow, man, we need to put this music out. We're so proud of these songs. We're so happy with this album. Our fans have been waiting for so long. It's almost been 6 years since the last record. We need to start releasing music. So we came out with The Antidote last November. And since then, we've been releasing new music. And now the album is finally out. And the reaction has been amazing. And I guess in some ways, everything happens for a reason. And it feels like the perfect timing now to have this new music out. You know?
Well, I guess to a point where, you know, you've got to move on yourself creatively, because I know sort of other bands had 2 albums and they were like, what do we do? You know, because, you know, I've already checked out on that first project and we still haven't released that yet. And, you know, that's the problem being in a band. You can't keep it on the shelf for too long.
Yeah, you know what? We've never done that in our entire career. And like usually when you have a record, you're so eager to share it right away. And so to have these songs for almost 2 years, literally like a year and a half, 2 years, just kind of sitting there was really weird. What's the right strategy here? What's the right play? There was a lot of uncertainty and all that. But I think that one of the things that I realize now is that we always felt so confident about the music and we love these songs so much that even after sitting on them for 2 years, they still feel fresh. They still feel new. They still feel exciting. They still feel current. They still feel exactly what we want Simple Plan to sound like at this moment in our lives and our career. So I think we really created a quote unquote classic Simple Plan album. Like we really took all the best elements from our entire career. What really made Simple Plan, Simple Plan, we were able to find these elements to find the essence of who we are musically. And we injected that into these 10 songs. And I think that's why it didn't feel dated or it didn't feel like, oh, I've checked out of that, because it's really, this record is really who we are. Like we've fully leaned into like, we're Simple Plan and we're proud of that. And we love what we do. And we're going to give you exactly that. And I think that that's been exciting and that's been freeing and really fun.
Of course it has. It's been almost 6 years. I mean, but seriously though, wake me up when the nightmare is over. You wrote that before COVID? It's just,
you know. You know what we did? Right, crazy, right? I mean, it was insane. Like as things were evolving and as we saw like the whole thing, we kept thinking, man, this song is about this pandemic. It's great. Like it's like we saw it coming. But yeah. No, I mean, I kind of feel like that's the beauty of music, is that, you know, you can take something and you can apply it to so many different things, and it can take on different meanings and for different people. Like people can take it and apply it to whatever they're going through in their lives and whatever is happening for them. So this song, I think it's just, I don't like the word vague. It's not really vague. It's just more open. It's just open enough that people can take it and they can really, it can resonate for whatever is going on in their life. If they're going through a struggle, if they're going through like a personal thing, whether it's a divorce or a tough moment, or it can be about a pandemic, or it can be the war, like the war in like Ukraine, or, you know what I mean? Like it can be applied to so many different situations. And I think that's just the power of a good song and of music in general, you know?
Well, you've always been good at writing songs that can relate to you know, teenagers growing up and the struggles, and no doubt you probably you know, got plenty of contact from your fans all the way through the pandemic. And was the big kind of almost a weight on your shoulders, you know, when you get these messages from fans?
Yeah, I think you're right for sure. We definitely had a lot of fans that saw themselves in the music and that it helped them you know, dealing with whatever circumstance they were in. And I don't think it ever felt like a weight on the shoulder. I think quite the opposite. It was one of the best compliments that we ever gotten as songwriters, is when somebody comes up to you and says, man, like, you know, your music has been so important in my life. It helped me so much. And it helped me get through some tough moments. And I think that's the most rewarding thing you can hear as a band member or a songwriter is that your music's actually helping people. And I think at first you don't really believe it. A lot of people would come up to us and say like, man, this song, your album saved my life, or this song saved my life. And we were like, you're kind of like, right, you're exaggerating. But then when you hear it twice and five times, 100 times, 1,000 times, like all around the world from different people, you start to think, like, yeah, music is really a lifeline for a lot of people. It's really something that they reach out for when they're struggling, when they're having a hard time. And I think that, to kind of comment on your question, like, I think it's interesting. A lot of people will say, oh yeah, it's only teenagers. But I think that people struggle at every stage of their lives. I'm 42, 43 years old now, and I'm a dad, I'm married, and things are not easy every day. I would say in some ways they're getting harder. There's more responsibilities, there's more things. And maybe people respond to these struggles differently as they get older. But I still think that fundamentally, you can still feel brokenhearted when you're 40 and you get through a divorce and you have to explain that to your kid and you have to look at your life with your partner and that's gone. And that hurts just as much as it does when you're 16 or 20 or 25 or whatever it is. When you're dealing with mental health and depression, I think back in the early 2000s, this stuff was a bit stigmatized and people said, oh, it's only teenager stuff. But I think more and more the last few years, a lot of people, whether it's athletes or entertainers or not teenagers, but actually like people that are extremely successful and are saying how difficult life can be, no matter how old you are. So I feel like for us, like we've always tried to make music that reflects what we're going through. It's always been sort of like a very honest process for us of being very transparent and being very open and like an open book type of thing with our songs. And every time that we wrote something, we tried to make it like a reflection of where we're at in our own lives, you know? And obviously now we're older and we try to write in a way that is reflective of where we're at. So I don't know. I mean, I always get a little bit curious about why people say it's only for teenagers, because for us, like we're still dealing with some struggle, even though we're in a band and, you know, you could call us quote unquote successful or whatever, but there's still moments where you're just like, man, I'm fucking lost. I'm not sure what to do here. And that's kind of what we like to write about.
Yeah. As you get older, you're right. The struggle doesn't end. I mean, bands like Jimmy Eat World, I remember Jimmy talking about how it was different writing breakup songs as an adult, as you are when you're say 21, and Jimmy Eat World did that really well. They had that sort of that album a couple of years ago. It literally was a breakup song for 40-year-olds.
and I think that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to just kind of, like with every stage of your life, you're trying to do songs that will sound like authentic to where we're at and genuine and heartfelt. And of course, at the same time, because you mentioned there's so many fans that use music as a way of like a therapy. And we hear all the time, people are saying like on social media, man, I can't wait for your new album. Like I really need Simple Plan songs in my life right now. I need something to help me keep going. And I think, so it's about us, what we want to say, and also what I think our fans need. So it's just trying to find the best way to kind of navigate those two things, you know, with the music.
Yeah, well, more than ever, you know, you are contactable by your fans. You know, you were able to get a direct feed pretty much whenever you want to, and likewise, you can, you know, communicate back to them. So yeah, you know, you know straight away where the fans are at and how they're feeling, and you know, we are coming off two of the toughest years ever. And it would have been a dilemma too, because part of you would have been thinking, let's get the album out. No one's doing anything. They can absorb music easier than ever. But then there's the old formula of you got to go on tour, you got to be everywhere, you got to be on TV, and then you release the album. And you know, you would have been under a lot of pressure from, you know, not just your management but your record companies as well.
Yeah, I kind of felt like for us personally, we were so busy with our own lives and families that I don't think we would have had the bandwidth or the capacity to be able to like do what needs to be done when you release music. I mean, we all have kids now. Like my kid was almost out of school for a year because of all the lockdowns and everything. So I was literally doing school every day. I wasn't really Chuck from Simple Plan for a year and a half. You know, I sort of put that aside a little bit, that side of myself. And I was just a dad that was trying to make sure my kid was okay and make sure that we were all okay, our family was okay. So I don't think we would have been able to, I think it's different if you're 21 or 22 when you, and all you have in your in the world is your band. But we had to be honest with ourselves and kind of say like, hey, like my head is not here right now. Like I don't have the time. I can't put, we've poured our heart and souls into these songs. And right now, like I can't give it what needs to be given in order for, you know, me to do this properly, to like, to tell the world the story of this album. Like I don't think we had the capacity in the beginning of this whole pandemic. We were just so fully immersed into just keeping the whole thing together. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, it's, that was our timeline. That's what we had to do. And I feel honestly, like, I feel like in a way the timing was impeccable that we waited, because when I look at the world right now, like the music world has changed so much. Pop punk is resurging in a crazy way that would not have happened 2 years ago. I think there's more interest in this kind of music than there ever was in years. And so that was a blessing in disguise in the way that we waited this long to be able to come back with all these new songs and a record that is so classically Simple Plan and pop punk. We literally had no idea, but somehow it happened. It kind of aligned like that. We also had this huge TikTok thing that happened, which has been insane during the pandemic. Like this, I'm just a kid, like phenomenon. This whole challenge took off and brought so many new fans, you know, to the band, and people discovering our old stuff and people just kind of discovering the band. So again, you know, we had no idea of kind of predicting all that, but I think in a way everything happens for a reason, and we decided to wait because we didn't feel it was the right timing. And somehow now it just feels really great to have these songs out, you know, it feels like great timing.
Yeah. Oh, you definitely nailed the timing. In fact, when you started, again, the timing was perfect because you had, you know, Good Charlotte, you had Blink 182, you had Lit. I think Papa Roach were around back then, Offspring and Green Day. I mean, that was definitely a big change when it came to rock as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because at the time, I think a lot of people around us, like whether it's labels or management or whatever, they just felt like, man, you guys better hurry up. This whole thing is going to pass. Like, you're going to miss the wave, you know? I mean, we felt that. Obviously, we wanted to be out there and we knew there was some momentum and some buzz on this kind of music. But we always felt like when you narrow it down, like pop punk is high energy, you know, songs, like it's kind of the Beatles, but play really fast with lots of distortion, very catchy and melodic. And it's also very honest and very heartfelt kind of lyrics. And I think that this style of music, I'm not talking about us specifically, I'm talking about the whole scene. There's a timeless element to it. And we always felt like it was gonna, if you have a good song, it's not like a fashionable scene. It's something that stay for a long time. There's a timeless feel to this kind of music. So we were never scared to be too late or whatever, to miss the boat. I think we always felt like there's never a good time for a bad song, and there's never a bad time for a great song. You know what I mean? So we felt like when the album was ready, let's just go and we're going to get our shot. And it was really exciting though, to be part of a scene like that. It just felt like this lightning in a bottle. You know, there was, like you said, Blink with Charlotte, Sum 41, and then like The Used came, and then you had like Fall Out Boy and My Chemical Romance, all these bands at the same time, like we're all popping, and there was an energy and a sense of community. But at the same time, there was, I wouldn't call it competition, but there was a thing where you like a band would come out with some great song, and it just made you, it inspired you. It made you want to make a better record. You know, it made you want to do as good, if not better than them. So it was actually really inspiring and exciting. And it was crazy that, you know, you like, we could be on Jay Leno and we could be on Conan O'Brien and we could do on MTV and we could go to Australia and kick off the first MTV Australian Awards. Like, it was just, there were so many opportunities. It was really, really exciting.
And tell me the story about how you got discovered, because I heard that you managed to coax an A&R rep up into Canada just to come and see you. It took a lot of work, and finally he gave in.
Yes, yeah. So we make these packages, and we would FedEx them to all the A&Rs that we saw on the album packages. Like, we would see, like, a band that we love, and we see A&R by this person. All right, we're going to target you and send you this package. And we bought this thing called the Yellow Pages of Rock. It actually existed back then. It was this book with every label and whoever worked there, and it had, like, the list of their contacts. And I would phone people and say, hey, I'm Chuck. I would make up a name and I would say, I'm Chuck Talbot and I'm the manager for this new band in Montreal called Simple Plan. And they're amazing. You should listen to them. Would you accept a package from us? And, you know, a lot of them say, okay. And then I would FedEx them the next day. I would follow up. And this guy that ended up signing us, he actually picked up the phone and he talked to me and he said, okay, I did listen to it. I really like the music. I'd love to see you live. So obviously we didn't have any shows, and he told me, like, tell me when you're in New York next. And we're like, we're not in New York. So anyways, we heard he was coming to see another band in Montreal called Rubberman at the time to possibly sign them. And our friend, our best friend, who was our photographer and was involved with us, worked at their record label. And he tipped us off and saying, oh my God, you won't believe what's happening. This guy, Andy Karp was his name, is coming to Montreal in 5 days to watch this band showcase for them. We need to play for them, right? So we ended up, like, looking around the whole city and we booked this. There was no club available. Nobody would like have us play. We were nobodies. Like, we didn't have any record or nothing. So we ended up finding this dive bar, this club called Club Zone. And we packed it with all our friends. Literally told them, like, pretend you're like our fans. And this guy came and he came, I think, and the bar was like, you need to get on stage. No, we can't. He's not here yet. And finally he arrived after seeing the other band. He arrived like I think it was like 11 p.m. And we shook his hand and said, okay, we have to go right now. We have to go play. And we started playing and we play our hearts out. We gave it everything we had, like, literally, like, it was like we were playing. And it was the last show we would ever play. And after that, we went for dinner with him. We talked until like 2 a.m. And the next morning from the airport, he called us and said, you know what? I'm signing you guys. Let's make a record together. And he never signed the other band. So I feel bad for the other band. We kind of stole their thing. So I apologize. But we ended up, it was the start of a 20-year career on Warner. And it gave us a chance, you know, to do what we love the most. And it was one of the most important evening in my life, you know?
That's amazing. What is the things you do in early in your career, whether it's music or whether it's, you know, in anything like media or radio or whatever, you do these crazy things where you look back and you go, I can't believe I did that. You know, you're so fearless, yeah, and brave, and it's just stuff that you would never do as a 40-year-old.
That's the thing. You have to go for it. You have to believe in yourself. And I think that in a way, like, we try to keep that spirit. It's not as easy when you have things to lose and you're older and you're more self-conscious and all that. But when you're young, it was like, and like, we would have ran through a wall to do this. You know, we were so passionate. It was our obsession. Like, we wanted to be in a band. We wanted to do this and we were ready to do anything, you know? And it was, I'm so glad that we had that spirit. You know, some people don't have that, but for some reason we had that crazy, I don't know, like, that crazy belief that we could do it, you know?
Now, the podcast is called The Writer. So, you know, obviously, okay, you're on tour right now with Sum 41. And what do you put in your writer these days compared to, say, when you started off?
Yeah. Well, there's one element that came to mind that's going to be like, that I probably did not put when I was 21 years old, but I like to have a copy of the New York Times, like the paper. So yeah. And it's not every day that we get it, but when this venue with this promoter is so rad, thank you so much. It really makes my day. I'm trying to think of what else. It's kind of basic. I was just talking to somebody else before and they were asking who had the more like elaborate writer. And I would say ours is pretty, I wouldn't call it cheap, but like, it's kind of like, we're not very extravagant, you know, it's kind of like basic. Greek yogurt is a big one for me. I like to have that. That's important for me. I'm trying to think of what else is like, really, there's nothing much. Like, I feel like it's so annoying because every day you go and like, you have the same salsa and the same chips and the same snacks. And it's just like, oh man, like, I miss, because we haven't toured in 2 years and like, I miss having all the stuff that I want. But our writer needs to be updated, I think. You're making me think about this. It's not that great.
But then again, you are ultimately paying for it anyway. So, you know, that's the thing we forget.
We actually cut it down all the time because we're like, hey, you know, we are paying for it. That's kind of dumb. Let's not waste anything, you know? So, yes.
Well, in the early years, though, you forget about that because when you're on the road, you know, doing tour bus life as well, I can imagine a lot of things are for survival. Like you're thinking, okay, we'll ask for a bottle of whiskey because you can kind of ration it over a couple of concerts or whatever, because you're not going to hand back a half bottle of whiskey. You're going to take it with you. But you hear stories about, you know, fresh pairs of socks and a t-shirt and whatever, you know, it's interesting.
See, we've never done that. I always felt that was so wasteful. Like, I was like, hey, like people really throw their underwear or their socks after like, that seems just such a waste of not only money, but just like, it's so disposable. So I actually always pack like enough underwear and socks to get through the whole tour. So I usually pack about 45 pairs of socks or 50 pairs of socks and about 50 pairs of underwear. And I'm just like, yeah, if I don't get to do laundry, I'm good. I don't need to buy anything. I don't need to do anything. I'm okay. But it definitely makes the baggage a bit heavy.
Yeah, it does. It does. Especially when you're smuggling alcohol across borders as well. That's the other thing. But well, look, Chuck, it's so good to catch up with you. And, you know, best of luck for the album, which is out now. Harder Than It Looks. And you've been trickle feeding those singles out over the last few months. And it's been great to see, you know, the fans respond. And, of course, now the album's out. You know, it's been a long time coming, as they say. So, Chuck, take care, and we can't wait to see you down here soon.
Thank you so much. We can't wait to be back in Australia. We love it there, and we can't wait to play again for you guys. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, there he is, Chuck from Simple Plan. What a cool guy. They're currently on tour with Sum 41 right across North America. And, of course, check out the new album, which is Harder Than It Looks. It is out now. The Writer with Becco is on Instagram. Actually, a follow, The Writer Pod. Next week on the show, well, one of our favourite bands out of Perth, Eskimo Joe, lead singer Cav, is back with a brand new solo album. His new single is out now as well. We'll talk to Cav from Eskimo Joe next week. Catch you then. This is The Writer with Becco.